Saram, dear listeners, and my humble pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the voice and the listener of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Greetings and a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. And it's really a warm welcome because the divine hamlet, the spiritual capital of the universe, Prashant Nilayam Ashram, the weather here is really warm and very hot. The temperatures is expected to rise to about 41 degrees Celsius, and it's almost every day now. We are waiting for some showers from above, some summer showers, some cool drizzles at least, and it will happen very soon. So I hope you all enjoyed the segment, the previous segment, Morning Glory, and now it's time for Venkatraman Sir's musings. Well, 24th of this month, the month of April, we celebrated the Aradhana Day of Swami. That is 5 years ago, that year, on 2011, 24th April, Swami left his physical body. And this year, 24th of this month, was the 5th anniversary of that occasion. So it was a Sunday, and in the morning there was a Mahanarayana Seva in the Hillview Stadium, Vidyagiri Hillview Stadium here at Parthi. About 50,000 people from Parthi and around the and villages around Parthi had come to the Hillview Stadium to partake Swami's Prasadam in the form of food and clothes. Well, after that there was function program at Sai Kulanth Hall, and the chief guest for the occasion was Honorable Union Minister of Urban Development, Housing and Urban Poverty, Sri M. Venkaiah Naidu. Well, dear listeners, before we listen to the talk, musings talk by Professor G. Venkatraman, as always, I have got a question for all of you. And the question for today is, on the Aradhana Day this year, this month, that happened to be on 24th of this month, a new initiative by Sri Satya Sai Seva organization was started. It was for inspiring children across India and for empowering about 900 schools all over India. A new project by Sri Satya Sai Seva organization. So today's question from me for all of you is, please give me the name of this new project that Sri Satya Sai Seva organization started on 24th of this month as part of 5th anniversary of the Aradhana Day. Please send me the right answer to my email ID, that is raghu@radiosai.org, raghu, R-A-G-H-U, raghu at radiosai, radiosai, one word, .org. And I'll be back again at the other end of Venkatraman Sir's talk, and I will announce the names of the listeners who have given me the right answer. And also, after I announce, we will listen to an excerpt from talk delivered by the All India President of Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization, Mr. Nimish Pandya. This talk was delivered on 24th of this month on the morning of Aradhana Day. And in this excerpt, Sir talks about the project. He explains to us in detail. So right now, please let me know the name of the project which was initiated on 24th of this month, and let's listen to GV's talk now.
In the series Musings from Prashant Nilayam, Radio Sai now presents a talk by Professor G. Venkatraman, former Vice Chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning.
Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanti Nilayam. Today I am going to deal with a very difficult subject. Recently we received a letter from a young listener. I shall first read out the letter because it speaks for itself. This is what the letter says. My friend, 23 years old and a devotee of Swami since birth, committed suicide yesterday evening. I cannot accept this and do not know how to either. Is suicide also fated? Where does Swami's will come into the picture then? Why didn't Swami overpower it and save him? Was it Swami's will that he should go in this manner? The boy walked up the building, up to the high floors, and simply jumped off. Why didn't Swami stop him? Should I console myself again that this is karma? Can we blame everything on karma? To me, Swami is God. And why did God allow this boy to suffer mentally and do this to himself? Swami has always stood by me in bad times. Then why didn't Swami help this boy as well, when all are his children whom he loves equally? I love Swami very much, but I don't understand. Can you please help me to come to terms with this type of death? That was a pretty painful letter, was it not? The listener has raised many questions. These kind of questions have been raised again and again in the past. Wise men have answered these questions, or answered such questions, I should perhaps say. But these answers are not well known or have been forgotten. But this I will say. The subject touched upon by the writer of this letter is a difficult one, and the answer is not exactly simple. So, let me take this opportunity to go over the entire subject slowly and in some detail also. Many questions have been asked by the listener, and they are all linked, of course. Let me state those questions in my own words. One, what is it that is fated? That is, what is it that is predetermined and what is it that is not? Who is the one who decides? Is it God or is it man? Three, if it is God, as many say, then why is man punished in the name of karma? 4. Is karma unchangeable? Cannot God do anything about karma? 5. Why does not Swami help when one is a devotee? 6. In this case, why did Swami allow the person to go through mental disturbance leading eventually to suicide? 7. When God is supposed to love all equally, why is it that some appear to get God's grace and some do not? This is roughly the trend of the letter that I have read out earlier. I have been asked many such questions many times. Believe me, they are not easy to answer. But since I have been posed the problem, let me do the best I can. Let me start with the theory of relativity, which is a branch of physics. Incidentally, this owes its discovery to late Albert Einstein. In the special theory of relativity, by the way, Einstein had two versions. One is called the special theory and the other is called the general theory. General theory is more esoteric, but I'll confine myself to special theory. In the special theory, what Einstein does is to compare what two observers say. They are both watching the same events and one of them is standing still, or is stationary, as we say in physics. The other person is moving at a uniform velocity. When the uniform velocity is almost equal to that of the speed of light, then strange things start happening. Same events seen by two people, but from two different perspectives. And what they see also differs considerably. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because life and indeed the whole of creation can be seen from two substantially different and two fundamentally opposite perspectives. One perspective is that of total oneness, shall I say. In this there is just the absolute and nothing else. Things appear in one particular way in this perspective. There is another perspective which is relevant to almost all of us, and that's the one I shall focus on from now on. Incidentally, in case you are confused about these two perspectives, let me give you a very, very simple example. Supposing you look up into the sky during daytime, that is. There are no clouds. What would you see? You would see a nice blue sky. Supposing you get into a rocket and fly away, say, towards the moon. You go through the atmosphere and you go above the atmosphere while traveling in this manner. The atmosphere is just about 100 kilometers or so thick. So it's quite easy to get out of the atmosphere using a rocket. You don't even have to go to the moon. Once you go beyond the atmosphere and look at the same sky, you will be amazed. You will find it absolutely black. Yes, black. Just go and take a look at any of the NASA photographs taken from space. You will see the sky is black. So the question is the sky black or is it blue? The answer is simple. If you see from the face of the Earth, it looks blue for some reasons, of course. And if you go outside the atmosphere, it looks black, again for different reasons. So the same thing can have two perspectives, and this is true for creation. One of these is the absolute perspective and the other is the dual perspective. The dual perspective is relevant to us because we live in a dual world and therefore it is somewhat relevant to us. Now in this dual world we have two entities, God and man. God is the puppeteer and there are two strings attached to each puppet. Now what God does is, he keeps one string in his hand and gives the other string to man. Having given this other string to man, God holds his string rather loosely. God now sits and watches. He doesn't pull the string. He wants to see what man does. And what does man do? He tucks the string any way he likes. Now, how come man decides the way he should tug? Who gives him the incentive? Who decides? Actually, it's the mind of man that decides. How does the mind make the decision? Well, the mind is guided by the senses which are outward, and the net result is man's actions are decided by his rather outward look. Okay, but then what on earth does God do? The answer is simple, he just sits and watches as a witness. As the scriptures say, he functions rather like a sakshibhutam. Now this is an important point. When we let the mind decide our actions, then God does not intervene. He just sits and watches. He lets us run our life the way we think we want to. You may ask, is this fair? Well, the answer is, it may not quite appear that way, but then God has given the advice what man should do. The problem is man doesn't want to listen to the advice of God, even if the advice is repeated again and again and again. That's what Swami does, for example. Okay, is this a no-win game? Not at all. What's the solution? How does one get out of this rut? Answer is simple. Surrender. Now what on earth does surrender mean? Give God the total charge. What does that mean? Well, God has given us one string. Has he not? We give back that string to God so that he now has both strings. Okay, we give our string back to God. What happens? Well, God now takes full charge and he starts pulling both strings. And then, well, if we let God run the show, he will lead us properly and safely. Now you may say, look, many things are not clear. Like what? Well, why does not God do this right in the beginning? Why does he wait for us to give up the string he has given to us? Why did he have to give a string to us in the first place? Why, for example, did he not help this young man? Did he not know that he was in deep difficulties? Supposing you start answering this question and say, yes, yes, but wait a minute. You would say, what is this but? This is an evasion. Is it? Let's think carefully. Let us say there is an examination. There is a teacher. The teacher loves all his students dearly and he has helped them throughout the year. Quite a lot with their studies. Finally comes the day of the public examination. The venue is the school itself and the teacher is now an invigilator. You know what that means. The question papers have been distributed, the exams have started, the teacher is moving to and fro, keeping an eye on the candidates. He finds that some are very busy answering, while some are in panic and not able to answer the questions. He may say, so what? What has that got to do with the problems we are discussing? It's all very confusing. I would say it's not at all confusing. Just be patient and let us think through the issues very slowly. Forget the exams for a minute and we'll start with who we are. I'll come back to the exams a little later. Let me take this issue of who are we. We think we are the body, but Swami reminds us again and again that we must think properly. This is what Krishna told Arjuna. So who exactly are we? Answer, we are a spark of the divine, wearing a human form. Okay, but why all this? Well, God has given us this dress and the life as a test. Now, what's this test given to us by God? God wants to find out whether we have understood our true nature and the purpose of life. What exactly is the purpose of life? Well, the purpose of life is to get back to God. From God we all have come, and to God we all must return. Fine, but so what? What has that got to do with the problem and the discussion? Well, if we must go to a particular destination, we must travel in the right direction, right? Are we doing that? You may ask, what's the mistake, if any? The mistake is that we are taking instructions from the world-oriented mind rather than from God-oriented conscience. If we followed conscience, we would know which direction to go in. And since we are not following the conscience, the trouble starts. In what way? Well, the mind says, hey, try this, do this. It's great stuff, you know. When the mind says this, it misleads and misleads terribly. But we do not double check with the conscience. We go on the wrong track because we place faith in the mind. You may protest and say, listen, all this does not explain the problem of the young man who put an end to his life. He was good and devoted to Swami. Why then did not Swami save him? Where is the answer to all that in this fancy talk? Okay, let us examine this and other such cases. Please bear with me, but let me ask you, how many people really know what the purpose of life is? Even if they know it, how many think about it often? Even if they think about it, do they try to correct the course of their lives in case it is on the wrong track? You may say, okay, maybe they don't do, so what? Why do they do this incidentally? People do this because they do not take mind and sense control seriously. If we take mind and sense control seriously, and Swami has been advocating this again and again, then chances of life going off track are less. You may say, listen, that may be true of the ordinary Joe, but not staunch devotees. Please tell me, why did not Swami save the boy? That does appear to be a problem, does it not? But this is exactly where the analogy I gave of the teacher and the examination earlier becomes very relevant. Let me explain. Can the teacher go and help a student who is struggling to come up with the correct answer? Would that be considered fair? Supposing the teacher did it, would not all the other students scream foul? See, life is really an examination. We all think it's for having a ball and enjoying and so on, but it is not. It is an exam which would decide whether we get a visa to return to our natural habitat or not. Pass the test and the visa is given. Flunk the test and the visa gets delayed. All this may not cut much as ice, and so maybe I have to add some more points. So let me go back to the questions I started with. First question, what is it that is fated and what is it that is not? This is where the famous law of reflection, reactions and resound comes in. Remember this? Swami has talked about it so many times. You see, when we hold one string and hand it over to the mind, this law operates in its full glory. You may say, okay, but what about the predestined business? Here is where an example from physics comes in handy. Take the law of gravitation, Newton's law of gravitation. I'm sure you all know about it. The law of gravitation is one thing, and the way it actually operates is another. The operation is what may be called a derived principle. In the case of gravitation, in order to find out how the law operates, we have to work with what are called the equations of motion. Let me explain. Let's say we have the sun, the earth and the moon. According to the law of gravitation, the earth attracts the moon and the moon attracts the earth. Let us say the earth changes its position slightly. That will produce an effect on the moon. And the moon moves. That will produce an effect on the earth, and so on. How do we work all this out? We have to use the equations of motion for which the gene is the law of gravitation. So using these equations, we can work out the consequences of any given situation. And this is how planetary motion, satellite motion, etc. is all worked out all the time. In the same way, where life is concerned, there is a law, a moral law, if you will, that governs our lives. And as long as we hold one string, this law operates essentially as reflection, reaction, resound law. No matter how much we may claim that we are devoted to Swami, if we really examine ourselves, we would find strong traces of body consciousness, etc. That is what is meant by holding on to the string. The day we give up body consciousness is the day we give back the string to God. And then the law of reflection, reaction, resound stops operating and things happen very, very differently. You may say, why do we tie ourselves in this contradiction? We say we are devoted to Swami, and yet there is this man accusing us of having body consciousness, being a prisoner of the mind, etc. How is that possible? That is what you may say and object to what I am telling you right now. Well, you see, basically, we tend to see life in segments. All of us do have a great relationship with Swami, no doubt. But when it comes to many other things, we tend to act as if Swami is not concerned or involved. Let me give a very trivial example. Swami says, live in love. And we all applaud. We go out of discourses with a glowing face and all that. 10 minutes later, we are rude to somebody or the other. All that stuff about love is completely forgotten. We may not be conscious of these things, but they happen all the time. And it is only when one truly surrenders that life becomes different. When one surrenders, one is not affected when there is a tragedy. The so-called tragedy is something connected with the world, and only those who attach importance to the world will regard the tragedy as very serious. Those who are not attached to the world will let it pass. And that's the way God is. Just to give an example, many years ago, one of Swami's sisters suddenly lost her husband. The whole village was plunged in gloom. And Kasturi came and asked Swami, Swami, how can you be like this? Your sister has been widowed. Swami smiled and said, well, birth and death are twins, inseparable twins. If there is no birth and there is no death, God has no work to do. That was a cryptic statement, but it also indicates the way Swami was detached, despite the fact that great tragedy had struck the family. The reason I am telling you this story is, how many of us are capable of being that way? You may turn back and say, listen, stupid, what you are asking for is impossible. Nobody can be like that. Swami could be like that, but you and I can't be. I agree, but are we at least trying? The point is, we must go through life trying and not ignoring the purpose of life, which is what most of us do. We can't give up without trying. So in a nutshell, life is a dynamic game where we ourselves determine what's going to happen. Many may object, but sometime or the other, the seed must have been sown. And that is why things happen, because we have already sown the seed. So in a sense, we are the people who determine our fate. That's what Shakespeare also said. Some of you may recall that quotation. The fault lies not in our stars, but in ourselves. Okay, let me now go on to the next question. Who decides, God or man? I think by now the answer should be clear. If we think we are deciding, then everything is destined by us. If we hand over to God, then it is God who decides. So we have to make up our mind. If we hold on to one string, then we are the party who decides. If we hand over the string in our hand to God, then it is God who decides. That's the way it is. I can't help it. Okay, now to the third question. If God decides, why is man punished? My answer is simple. When God pulls the string entirely, which happens when we totally surrender, then there are definitely no consequences arising out of that. Of that we can be sure. But there still might be some past debts, a few of them, that have to be settled. And on those occasions, one might feel that God is not really helping us and so on and so forth. Let me give an example. This example that I am going to give is of the saint, Indian saint that is, Sakubai. Many of you may know her story. About a year or so ago, the Balvikas children from some state staged the life story of Sakubai as a drama in Purnachandra Hall. In the drama shows, young Sakubai, small girl at that time, becoming lost in Krishna. She didn't want anything in her life except Krishna. But one day, her parents decide to get her married off. Sakubai throws herself at Krishna's idol and cries. Up there in heaven, Krishna is there with his consort Rukmini. And Rukmini is very disturbed by what's going on earth. and the fate that is apparently awaiting Sakubai. So she asks Krishna, "Krishna, how can you be so heartless? Here is Sakku who is so devoted to you and she is about to be thrown into the storm called life. And you are sitting quiet here watching the fun. Is it funny? Why don't you do something to save her?" I will never forget the line that Krishna speaks. Whoever wrote that script was really a master, understood Swami's teachings. Krishna smiles and says, "Rukmini, can you ever get juice out of a sugar cane without crushing it?" That is the point we have to keep in mind when we try to judge God. Now to the most important question, can karma never be wiped out? Will God not help at all? My answer is, who says no? God can do anything and does it too. Let me give you a few examples. I'll give you one example only because there is not enough time. This is the example of a gentleman who lives here in Prasanthinilayam. He must be past 75, I think. His children are out there in the world in different places, but he has chosen to live here all alone by himself, doing various kinds of service in the ashram. Why? Because 35 years ago, when he was much younger and in service, he suddenly was struck by liver cancer, terrible disease, sure death. And the doctors told him so. They said, "Mr. Ravindran, you have just 3 months. Make the best use." And you know what he did? He came to Prasanthinilayam, sat there in darshan line. Swami came, looked at him and said, "Your cancer is cancelled." That is it. Why did he do that? Who can explain? But all I am trying to tell you is that karma can be cancelled and we have to make the right effort to get the cancellation. People do not realize that God is extremely compassionate, far more than we realize and understand. Often, if we just show a trace of our seriousness in God, He goes out of the way. But then on other occasions, He does seem to be very indifferent. And we say this God is unkind, He is cruel. Is it really so? Let me narrate a story, the true story by the way. Apparently this happened many years ago when Swami went to Simla, long time ago. He gave darshan. Of course, he does this always. And he went out of the way to go to a small village and give darshan to a lady. And he told everyone, apparently, that this lady was very devoted to him. And the lady was just thrilled. Next day, the lady came to where Swami was giving darshan and she brought with her a young child. And when Swami went past, she cried and said, "Swami, I am so blessed, but please bless this child, it is blind. How can the child be blind, Swami? Please help." Swami ignored, apparently. Next day, again the lady came, again she pleaded, again Swami ignored. This went on day after day, for a few days. And then one day, Swami Karunyananda, he used to be with Swami in those days, and he told Swami after darshan was over and the two were alone, he said, "Swami, how can you be so indifferent? That lady is devoted to you. You went to her house all the way. And now she is making this plea every day. She is begging. You can do anything. Why don't you restore the eyesight of that child?" And you know what Swami did? He said, "Karunyananda, you think you have karuna and I don't have. Well, let me tell you that my action is based on compassion and not what you think." It was Karunyananda's turn now to get totally surprised. He said, "What do you mean, Swami? How can you keep a child blind and say you are doing it out of compassion?" And you know what Swami said? "Karunyananda, you cannot see the past. I can see the past and the future. This child was a terrible person in the previous birth. He was a cruel man who used to kidnap kids and blind them and make them beggars. That man is paying for his sins now. Supposing I restore his eyesight, that does not mean his karma will get cancelled. Just his blindness will be cancelled. And he has to pay for that karma in the next janma. And at that time, it will become worse. It is far better to get the cancellation of karma done now than postpone it." I have heard of a few other stories like that relating to Swami, but I shall not go into those stories right now. The point simply is that this business of cancellation of karma can be done by God. But if sometimes God does not do it, we should not jump to conclusions. I hope with this story I have answered all the remaining questions. So before I wind up, let me give one instance where God came into the picture in a somewhat subtle way. I can talk about this story because I have been involved in it. Let me tell the story as best as I can and as quickly as I can. It happened many years ago when I was the vice chancellor here. In the month of summer, we make admissions, new admissions. And what used to happen was, every day before the entrance test started, I would gather all the students, that is the candidates, appearing for the entrance examinations and their parents. Invariably, the parents came along with their offsprings. And I would talk to them for 5 or 10 minutes. I would congratulate all the children and the parents for trying to seek admission into our institute. And I would wish them well, etc., etc. And then at the end, I would say, we have only so many seats, so we can admit only so many students. Some of you may be successful, some of you may not be successful. However, those who are not successful should not feel depressed and think that this is the end of the world. It simply means that God has got some other destiny in store for you. Have the faith that God always wishes well and will only do what is best for you. This was the sort of a routine speech I used to give. Okay, the exams are over, admissions were made, we announced the results. And I was getting ready for the commencement of the new academic year. I was here and Prishantinilayam Swami was in Vrindavan. One day, a letter was placed before me. It was from a candidate who had not succeeded. We do get a few letters of this kind from candidates, disgruntled candidates who complain and this and that. And normally these letters are answered by the office staff. But this letter was placed before me because it was a kind of a special letter. This was a letter from a 17-year-old girl from Bangalore. And in this letter she said, I'm terribly disappointed. I did not get admission. I was looking forward to it so much. My world is shattered. I am going to commit suicide. Boy, was I scared. I immediately wrote a long letter explaining to this young girl, life is a gift of God and it should not be thrown away, etc., etc. I tried to make a very convincing and persuasive case. And along with the letter, I sent a copy of the Bhagavad Gita in English. I said this letter and the Bhagavad Gita must be sent immediately to Bangalore to this girl by registered post. 10 days later, I get another letter from this girl. I said, oh my God, what's now? What's up now? And it was with great worry and hesitation that I picked up that letter to read. And you know what? When I read that letter, I was absolutely dumbfounded. In that letter, the girl said, dear sir, I am very grateful to you for your letter and your kind words. I now understand that I was refused admission by God for a very definite reason. You see, my mother is very sick and my father is not bothered about her at all. My elder sister goes to work and she too is not concerned about my mother. So I have decided to stay home and help my mother. I think this is what God wants me to do. I was deeply touched and needless to say, I was also very relieved. At least I had saved a life. Years passed and the story completely, I should say incident, not story, completely slipped out of my mind. About 2 years ago, one night at 8 o'clock, I heard a knock on my door. I was kind of busy and I didn't like people coming and disturbing me. I value my time and privacy very much. So in a slightly irritated mood, I went and opened the door. I was all alone at home. When I opened the door, there was a young girl who looked at me and smiled and said, can I come in? I was wondering who on earth this girl was and said, all right, come in. And after she came in, she said, sir, do you remember me? For the life of me, I could not place her. I said, no, I'm afraid I can't. Then she said, sir, I am the girl who wrote that letter. That was all she said. And immediately I realized who it was. I said, oh my God, you are that. No, before that, she said, I am Vasanti. I said, Vasanti who? That was when she said, I am the girl who wrote that letter. And I said, oh my God, how are you? She said, I am doing fine. And then we talked about her, her mother, her sister, etc., etc. She had done BSc in computer science and she was going to MSc computer science and so on. Her life had turned out to be quite satisfactory even though she thought the life had come to an end or her world had come to an end because she did not get admission here. Okay, Do I really get any credit for all this? Not at all. You see, God had just decided to use me to test that young girl. She passed the test and her future came out okay. I think we are not stressing enough, especially to young people, what is meant by true devotion. How many stress the fact that life is meant to be lived entirely for God, that this life has been given by Him, that it is His property and that we have no business to throw it away. If this lesson is dinned into the people of the world, there would be less suicide. I read somewhere that in Kerala alone, there are over 1,000 suicides every year. But what are we doing to help the people about developing faith in God? Hardly anything. So in a nutshell, we ought not to go through life with the usual perspective formed through innumerable past lives. Let me tell you very briefly the story of a lady from Kerala. This lady was traveling with her entire family in a car, and the car met with an accident. Every single person belonging to that family was killed except this lady, and there were quite a few in the car. Do you know what happened? The lady came to Prashanthi Nilayam. She did not cry and wail and weep and lament before Swami. She was cool, calm and collected. She just said, "Nobody is to be blamed, least of all God. Whatever has to happen, happened, that's all." She did not think she was being punished or that God was cruel or that God was unkind. Now that is what giving up all attachment really means. Swami always says that everything is for the good. I can speak from personal experience. I can say that a few traumatic experiences I have had in the past now appear very different. I realize they occurred so that my life would take a different turn. That turn has proved to be beneficial to me in the long run. So we must give God more credit than we are prepared to. And we must have greater faith in His compassion. I told you about Swami's family and the tragedy in Swami's family. Actually, there have been many. Could not have Swami prevented them? He could have, but He did not. He let God's operate, that is to say, His own law operate. If He had intervened, we would then accuse Him of partiality. On the other hand, He applies the same law to all. That's because He loves us all equally. I hope the listener will pay attention to that. In summary, the laws of God are inflexible, but the development of situations are quite flexible. This is precisely what happens in nature, as I explained earlier. 2. We can control our destiny by mastering the mind. When we master the mind, we become one with God and God takes over. But if you are subservient to the senses, then we are subject to the law of reflection, reaction, result. In that case, the fate is sealed by ourselves, not by God. 3. If our devotion is true and intense, then God will offer a helping hand. But we must be smart enough to seize the helping hand when it is given. 4. The long and short of it is that each of us has a lot of responsibility. We cannot take many things casually as we tend to. 5. Loving Swami is not just a matter of attending bhajans regularly, performing all the prescribed rituals, etc., etc. There is much more to it and we should constantly think about these things. But do we? Young listener who wrote me this letter, I don't know if you are listening today, and I hope you are. If you are listening, I hope you will agree with what I am saying. In any case, all of you who have listened to what I have said just now, please do write and let us know what you think. As usual, you may write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
You have been listening to a talk by Professor G. Venkatraman in the series Musings from Prashanthi Nilayam. This broadcast came to you from the studios of Radio Sai.
Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.
Dear listeners, Loving Sairams and greetings from Prashant Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. I'm Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and once again, a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. Well, the time right now in our studio is 11:45 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and Prashant Nilayam today is really hot. The temperature right now is about 40 degrees Celsius, and the weather forecast says that the temperatures will raise by another 2 degrees Celsius, that is, it may go to 42 degrees Celsius. Well, a really hot summer at Prashant Nilayam. So till now you heard to Professor G. Venkatraman, sir. And today is 28th of April. Well, 24th of April, that is 4 days ago, it was a Sunday, and we saw it was the day of Aradhana, the Aradhana Mahotsavam. As 5 years ago, on the same day, in the year 2011, Swami left his physical body. And on that day morning, there was a Mahanarayana Seva in the Hillview Stadium, Vidyagiri Hillview Stadium at Prashant Nilayam. About 50,000 people from Parthi and from the villages around Parthi came to Hillview Stadium to partake the prasadam. The chief guest of that day was Honorable Union Minister of Urban Development, Housing and Urban Poverty, Sri M. Venkaiah Naidu. Before Venkatraman sir's musings, I had asked you a question, and that question was based on the Aradhana Day this year. Well, on 24th of this month, a new initiative was started by the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization to inspire children and to empower about 900 schools all over India. And my question was, which was that project that was started? And the answer is Sri Satya Sai Vidya Jyoti. Well, I had told you all to mail me the correct answer, and about 7 listeners have given me the correct answer, and let me read out their names. They are Sister Dharini Narayanan, Pooja Sani, Mridula Murthy, Suhana Patel, Veda Patel from Johannesburg, South Africa, Purna Janakiram from Sharjah, and Sister Geeta Sundaram from Madurai. Thank you for the right answer, and thank you for participation. So, dear listeners, as you see, this month, on 24th of this month, as part of Aradhana Mahotsavam, a new project was started by Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, the project Sri Satya Sai Vidya Jyoti. Let's know more about this project from Mr. Nimesh Pandya, the All India President of Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, has on that day morning, that is on 24th of this month morning, sir had given a talk in Saikulant Hall, and he elaborately explained about this project. So right now let's listen to an excerpt from that talk.
The world looks for peace today, and Bhagwan had the only strategy, the real strategy for world peace. And I'm happy to mention this before our Honorable Minister, because he's striving very hard for world peace and also in the government. Sir, Bhagwan said, if there is righteousness in the heart, then there is beauty in character. If there is beauty in character, then there is harmony in the home. If there is harmony in the home, then there is order in the nation. And if there is order in the nation, then there is peace in the world. This is sacrosanct. Bhagwan has been extolling this for all the years of his sojourn on earth. But the first fundamental reason is righteousness in the heart. And this righteousness in the heart can never come without true education. In fact, if one sees the Charter of the United Nations, which is committed to world peace, it is very much written in the Charter that they would go to schools to teach young children the examples of the values of peace that are necessary. But probably we missed it out, and Bhagwan came to remind us that true peace from the world will come with true education. And the education of the kind that Bhagwan extolled as EduCare. Bhagwan started motivating the entire mankind, and especially our organization that spreads 186 countries. And all over the world, people are involved, And in the true sense, the real legacy of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba is a message of educare to the entire mankind. Bhagwan started in very simple, humble way. When he picked up young women, household people, with love, he started the Bal Vikas movement 50 years ago. And today, over 50 years, lakhs and lakhs of children have passed through the movement of Bal Vikas and are now placed in various positions. And therefore, they are all safe. Bhagwan has already established people of character and righteousness in the heart. With this movement started the next dimension of education in the country. And that was the Satya Sai University, the schools that Bhagwan started. The formal education. When Bal Vikas took care of the non-formal education, the universities took care of the formal education. But this was not enough. The circle had to go still further. Then Bhagwan got in the education and human values program that goes over throughout the world. When young children in different countries, in different languages, are now a part of the education human values program. This human values program further ventured into the next dimension of the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini program. And now, the Satya Sai organization in 186 countries has joined to close this circle of virtuous education at the launch of the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Jyoti program. Today, we are very happy and grateful to Bhagwan that we launched the next dimension of education in the divine mission entitled the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Jyoti program. The Sri Satya Sai Vidya Jyoti program is an offering by the Sri Satya Sai Youth Wing of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization India. And I stand here today to congratulate all the teams of young men and women throughout the states of India who came together to conceive this program. And on behalf of all of them, I offer this at the Divine Lotus Feet today morning. Dear brothers and sisters, we know Bhagwan's expectation and Bhagwan's strategy to catch hold of young men and young women, young boys and young girls, and take them on the path of righteousness and good virtues based upon the five human values of Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema and Ahimsa. It is sad that when we talk of this, people don't believe it. But whether they believe or not doesn't matter, because this is a sankalp of our Divine Master and it has to succeed, and it has already succeeded as far as we are concerned throughout the length and breadth of this globe. Today's education in the country is in a very dismal state as far as rural India is concerned. We are happy that people are concentrating on that, people are working towards that, people have realized the real situation. 40% drop out from schools, 50% children can't read, even at standard 2, 73% children below 16 years live in villages and they have no good education, 71% attendance in schools. So many problems. Who's going to handle this? We cannot blame each other. The Satya Sai Seva Organization Youth Wing has taken upon itself to address these issues in a very unique way, because they are guided by Bhagwan's own important guidelines. Swami always said that education has two aspects. The first is related to external and the worldly education, which is nothing but acquiring bookish knowledge. The second aspect, known as educare, is related to human values and character. Sapling can be helped to grow straight, but once it becomes a tree, it cannot be guided by its growth. It has to be on its own. Children must grow up in the atmosphere of reverence, devotion, mutual service and cooperation. If this is the mandate of our master, let us address these issues of the rural education and children in the rural parts of India. We have integrated solutions to challenges that are listed before us. We are empowering teachers. We are introducing concepts of educare as enunciated by Bhagwan himself. If you want to improve the environment and give these children opportunities and exposure to the great knowledge and the great culture of our country so that they can imbibe it in a big way. I may tell you that the Vidya Jyoti is dedicated to inspiring children by empowering schools. Currently we aim that during the part of the years as we unfold this program today, we try to address the concerns of 900 schools nationwide in all the states of India, and this will be led by the youth of the Satya Sai organization, both young men and women. What will we do? The entire Satya Sai organization, in all its three wings, is going to back up the young men and women of the organization to carry this mission forward. Main objectives: try to upgrade the infrastructure in these rural schools, empower and energize the teachers and the children, and help in development of the individual and national character. The project will be led by the youth volunteers and supported by the Sevadal, Mahila Vibhag and the Balvikas Gurus of the Satya Sai organization. Who are the beneficiaries and stakeholders of this program? The encompass, the general, the complete environment of the village and the school, the students, the teachers, the family of the children who go to these schools, the villagers themselves, the school itself, volunteers who be a part of this, and especially act as a liaison to all the schemes that the government wants to implement and help them to ensure that the last mile is covered and covered in all these villages is the project phase. Four phases of this project. As we go down, we energize the entire environment, empower the teachers and the skills, equip them and then evolve so that within the span of a limited designated time frame, we can achieve this and help the children. The project timelines are practical and we want to ensure that we do this as fast as possible. And once we cover the 900 schools, probably we'll take up the next phase of the further number of schools that we can have. This is not something new. We've done this in the past also under the divine guidance of Bhagwan Shri Sat Sai Baba. And what is that ultimately that is helping us as an important part of nation building itself? One of the 10 commandments given by Bhagwan Shri Sat Sai Baba was that every citizen should follow the law of the land. And therefore, I think that was a part, and be a part of nation building, because Bhagwan never wanted us to achieve our own salvation. He always said that personal achievement of salvation is selfish, but when you achieve the salvation and try to get the whole world to achieve salvation, that is the spirit of Bhagwan Shri Sat Sai Baba. So the part of the nation building project, 900 schools to become self-sufficient, 500,000 children and family members to be benefited, sir, 5,000 plus teachers and the staff to be empowered, 25,000 plus volunteers on a year-long selfless seva. I may add here today that the Satya Sai Seva organization, all the states, and especially my state presidents who are present here today, my vice presidents, my youth leaders of all the states, have offered this as a personal selfless sadhana. We are going to do it out of our own will and empowered by the blessings of Bhagwan Shri Sat Sai Baba and the rural and urban youth to develop life skills and participate in a nation-building initiative. This is the dream and the sankalp with which we today hope to launch and ensure that we work very, very hard as instruments of the Divine Master to achieve this so that Bhagwan's divine love reaches the children, the family and the villages where these 900 schools are going to be situated. We've selected all the 900 schools and the program launches immediately after the inauguration today by the hands of our respected guest today morning. I now invite the Honorable Minister, sir, to help us and gratefully help us to inaugurate this program today and dedicate this not only to the divine lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Sat Sai Baba, from where we draw sustenance and power, but especially to the cause of nation building and to our Bharat Mata, as we would say, because villages is where Bhagwan's heart was and that's where we really want to reach. I now invite the Honorable Minister to help us to inaugurate and lay the function today. Please, sir.
Use the book, sir. Yeah.